Hello and welcome to Employment Talk. We're here to discuss the HR issues affecting you and keep you up to date with the latest employment law news. My name's Jo Mosley. I'm a support lawyer in the employment team at Irwin Mitchell. I write our blogs and newsletters, and I keep the team and our clients up to date with what's happening in the world of employment law.
And my name is Elaine Hutley. I'm the national head of our wonderful employment team. So I lead the team nationally to deliver excellent service to our clients.
How are you, Elaine?
I'm really well, thanks, Jo. It's been a really busy week, but I'm really well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all right, actually. Although I think I mentioned, didn't I? I've had root canal treatment. So that's not
nasty.
Been too much fun. Yes, indeed. No. One of the joys of getting older.
Oh, you're not old, Jo.
Okay.
And so moving on from root canal surgery, what are we going to talk about today?
I thought we could talk about sex, Elaine. Not in the let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you and me. Do you know that song, Salt and Pepper?
I do.
It was one of my favourite songs from the early 90s. But as of course you know, when I'm talking about sex, I'm talking about the Supreme Court's landmark judgment that came out last month, which has been featured in just about every newspaper and news channel and is still being talked about and debated today. What I'd like us to do is to explain what the judgment was about, discuss the impacts of it for employers and service providers, and then perhaps to dispel some myths about it, which have been growing up like mushrooms ever since it was handed down. So before we start, though, I'd like to say that, like everyone, we have personal views about equality in law and in practice. And where we give our views, it's as equality lawyers. And this is a podcast on the current law. It's not a political talk.
And it's really unusual, isn't it, Jo, for us to give a disclaimer. But I think it's really important to note at the outset that we are discussing contested issues. Mm. And we do acknowledge that there will be differences of opinion about some of the stuff that we'll be covering. We also acknowledge that the ruling has caused distress to many trans people who are directly affected by it and by those who are campaigning on their behalf. But having said that, I do think it's really important for us to discuss the judgment and what it means for employers, because there are many implications that we do need to consider in how this judgment will have an impact on decisions that need to be taken, which we're going to come onto in our discussions today. So whilst on the one hand, the decision has clarified the law, on the other hand, this is the start now of a journey for employers to consider what it means to them practically.
Yeah, that's true. So let's start by looking at the judgment first then. Our listeners may be surprised to know that this decision wasn't about an employment law case, and in fact arose out of a dispute between a small group of women who were concerned about a policy of this Scottish government. Could you give our listeners a brief overview of the facts, Elaine?
Of course. So it all began back in 2018. The Scottish government created targets for gender representation on public boards in Scotland, and it essentially wanted to get more women on the boards. Mm-hmm. It included trans women within that data. And as you said, a small group of women objected to that and issued proceedings against the government. Now, they were successful. And in response, the Scottish government changed its definition of a woman, and it said that women included trans women who have obtained a gender recognition certificate, which changed their legal sex, and therefore they were eligible to be included in that data as women. Mm-hmm. So these women then went back to the court to challenge that position. They lost the case, but the case eventually wound its way all the way up to the Supreme Court, which led to the judgment last month.
Okay, so before we talk about the decision the Supreme Court reached, we're going to have to go into a little bit of detail about the Gender Recognition Act and the status of someone with a gender recognition certificate. So let me do that very quickly. Gender Recognition Act allows trans people to apply for a certificate once they've lived in their acquired gender for at least 2 years. And they need various bits of evidence for that, including a diagnosis that they have gender dysphoria and intend to live in their acquired gender for the rest of their lives. You can't apply until you are 18 years old, and you don't need to have had any surgery to modify your body. okay, once someone obtains a certificate, the Act says that they should be treated as their required gender for all purposes, but it also sets out some exceptions to that. And the question for the Supreme Court was whether the Equality Act, when it talks about sex and men and women, means biological sex or certificated sex, which would include people who had obtained a gender recognition certificate into the sex category they identify as.
That's right. It's a judgment about the statutory interpretation of two pieces of legislation and whether the Gender Recognition Act trumps the Equality Act when it talks about sex.
Yeah, indeed. So before we get to the decision, I just want to say a few words about who the Supreme Court heard from. And obviously, we know that it would have heard from the Scottish Government and from the women who brought the claim, who were known as Four Women Scotland. But four other organisations got permission to intervene and to make representations to the court. And these were Amnesty International and the Equality and Human Rights Commission, which both broadly supported the Scottish Government's interpretation. And then on the other side, there was a charity called Sex Matters, which was set up by Mayor Forstater, and three lesbian groups who jointly argued that sex had to mean biological sex to protect women and same-sex attracted women. So let's move on to the decision then. Could you explain to our listeners, Elaine, what the Supreme Court decided?
This judgment has attracted so much attention that I suspect all our listeners will already know the answer. But the Supreme Court has held that sex under the Equality Act refers to biological sex. So that means when it refers to men, it means a person born a male. And when it refers to a woman, it means someone who was born female. And these definitions are not affected by any gender recognition certificate. So as a result of the decision and for the purposes of the Equality Act, a trans woman with or without a gender recognition certificate remains a biological man, and a trans man with or without a gender recognition certificate remains a biological woman.
Yeah. It's probably helpful to explain that one of the main reasons the Supreme Court decided that a gender recognition certificate didn't affect the meaning of sex in the Equality Act was because it would make the Act unworkable. And it gave loads of examples to illustrate this, specifically in the context of the exceptions which are set out towards the back of the Act. And these allow organisations to provide separate or single-sex provisions, including changing rooms, but it also applies to organisations that just want to recruit people of one sex. So a rape crisis centre is a commonly cited example of that. But one of the most striking examples, to me at least, was in relation to the protections for pregnancy and maternity. And what the Supreme Court said was that if a biological woman obtained a gender recognition certificate and her sex became male for the purposes of the Equality Act, they would not be protected from pregnancy and maternity discrimination. And it said that these provisions would only make sense if sex had a biological meaning. But it was also concerned that interpreting sex as legal sex would create two subgroups for those people protected under the gender reassignment provisions and would give trans people with a gender recognition certificate greater rights than those without them. And it said that that would create particular difficulties for employers and other organisations, as they wouldn't have an obvious means of distinguishing between those two groups, particularly as information about someone's gender recognition certificate is private. Okay, so now we've got the background out of the way, let's look at how this decision impacts on employers. It's true to say that the Equality Act protects people against discrimination on any of the nine protected characteristics, which include sex and gender reassignment. And in most of the decisions you make about your staff in terms of who to recruit or to promote, etc., sex won't be a factor, nor should it be. But in some cases, sex does matter.
Yeah, that's right. And the most obvious examples are in an employment context, or if you want to appoint a woman to a particular role where you have a genuine occupational reason for doing so, or if you want to take positive action to support women.
Yeah, So let's take each of those in turn then, Elaine. Can we start with the genuine occupational requirement one? What circumstances might you want to restrict applicants to women?
Okay, so one example that the Supreme Court looked at was if you are running a rape crisis centre for women, because of the trauma that they've gone through, you will be able to exclude men from undertaking any role where they come into contact with the female victims. So you'd be able to exclude any men who apply to become a counsellor. You have a genuine occupational reason for excluding people of the opposite sex, even though that is sex discrimination, it is allowed in those circumstances.
Yeah. So what does this ruling mean then for those sorts of organisations, Elaine?
So now, after the Supreme Court decision, it means that if you have a genuine occupational requirement to recruit a woman to a role, you can only appoint a biological woman. A trans woman with or without a gender recognition certificate would not be eligible. And if they applied, you're able to exclude them.
Okay, thank you, Elaine. So let's take the next one then. What about positive action?
So employers can, if they want to, take positive action to help individuals with protected characteristics who are either disadvantaged or underrepresented in their workplace. This applies for any protected characteristic. So in the context of sex, if they think that they don't have as many women in top positions as they'd like, they can provide bursaries to help them get qualifications they need. They might reserve places on training courses and provide them with mentors and so on. The decision means that any positive action you take to support women as a sex class will be biological women only as per the Supreme Court's decision and won't include trans women with or without a gender recognition certificate.
You didn't mention this, Elaine, but it'll also impact comparators for discrimination claims, won't it? So if we consider, for example, a direct sex discrimination claim, a woman would have to show that the treatment they are complaining about was meted out to them because of their sex. So in those circumstances, their comparator would be a man. And obviously, if the claim was brought by a man, the comparator would be a woman. And I can think of a couple of cases where women employees have complained about having to share changing rooms and toilets with trans women. And their employer, certainly in one of those cases, has successfully argued that the comparator should be a female and not a man. And this decision now means beyond any doubt that the correct comparator has to be a man in those circumstances. So the question in relation to female-only changing rooms is, has this trans woman been treated less favourably than any other biological man? And of course, the answer to that must clearly be no.
That's right. But I think it's probably a good time to mention that the Supreme Court went to great pains to point out that its decision does not leave trans people unprotected. Mm-hmm. So trans people will continue to be protected from discrimination on the grounds of gender reassignment if they're disadvantaged because they are trans. And in addition, a trans woman will be able to bring claims of direct sex discrimination or harassment if they're perceived to be a woman or because they associate with a woman or vice versa, in the same way that a woman can in those circumstances as well.
That's true, but I think the reaction to this judgment demonstrates that many people and organisations, including employers, have interpreted the Equality Act in a way to allow users to self-ID into the spaces where they feel most comfortable, and particularly in the case of trans women, to benefit from programmes designed to help women. And of course, they now have a problem.
Yeah, that is true. And for many employers, the result of this judgment means that they're going to need to reconsider their approach and how they will balance the different considerations to comply with the law as it's been clarified, but also to balance considerations around culture, commitments to supporting diversity and inclusion, etc. And in the main, this means that they're going to be going through a process of considering what their policy is, particularly with regards to toilets and changing rooms. But this isn't just a policy consideration. There's also going to be a need to consider matters practically around what facilities there currently are, what space is available for future design and the provision of facilities. And I think it's really important to stress this isn't just a HR question, but HR teams are going to need to liaise with facilities teams, with colleagues who manage properties with landlords, etc. And if you are changing existing policy, the key consideration is how you're going to communicate that. And you're going to have to do it with empathy and understanding. You're going to have to be very sensitive to conversations and how these need to be handled. And line managers are also going to need specific training about how to go about these conversations, I think.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. Yeah, they're going to be quite tricky, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so I think it's probably a good time now to go through some of the myths about this decision. And as I've said, there's absolutely tons of stuff written about the decision. Some of it is very good, but there's a lot of it that isn't. So I'm going to ask you three questions that I've seen reported as fact and get your opinion on them.
Okay.
So the first one is, can organisations ignore this decision because it is going to be appealed? Now, my view is that's really bad advice, but I'd be very interested in your views, Elaine.
No, I don't think you can ignore it. At the end of the day, the Supreme Court is the highest court in the land, and there isn't actually a mechanism to appeal this decision.
Mm-hmm. I've seen posts, though, talking about appealing to the European Court of Human Rights. Do you think that's likely?
I'm sure at some point someone will bring a claim, and I do know that there's already a crowdfunder being prepared to litigate this, but I think it's really important to recognise that any case that's pursued is going to have to go through the usual process and be appealed upwards multiple times before it can be referred to the Human Rights Court.
Yeah.
And our best guess is this would take around 7 years, if not longer. If the European Court on Human Rights decide that this decision is at odds with the European Convention on Human Rights, it would issue a declaration of incompatibility, which the UK would then have to remedy. So I guess the point I'm making is that this is law. It could be undone at a later point, most likely by Parliament, but organisations do have to follow it in the meantime until it's changed.
Yeah, I agree. I think the only other point I would add is that the Supreme Court did consider the human rights issues in this case. But because neither party asked the court to make a declaration of incompatibility with the Human Rights Act, that issue never actually arose, you know, the idea of whether or not it's incompatible or not. Okay, let's move on then. So the next question is around guidance that the Equality and Human Rights Commission is going to produce to reflect this decision. And in fact, yesterday they published a consultation on its code of practice for services, public functions and associations. Now, it originally said it was going to hold a 2-week consultation period. It has now extended that for 6 weeks, and the consultation will close on the 30th of June. It also said that it would aim to get the code of practice approved by Parliament by the summer, but I'm not sure now, given that it's extended the consultation period, whether that's going to be possible. So my question is, should employers wait and see what's in the code of practice, or the confirmed code of practice, as opposed to just the draft version at the moment, before deciding whether to change their approach?
In a word, being very succinct, no.
Okay.
But if I explain why. So the draft code of practice relates to service providers, and it aims to help them understand the position, and it isn't directly relevant to employers vis-a-vis their staff, as opposed to their customers. Mm-hmm. And the decision, and therefore the law, is clear at the moment, and organisations are obliged to follow it unless they want to risk exposing their organisations to risk. The Commission has published an interim update, which is less than a page long and is really easy to read. And it does contain guidance about toilets, etc. So we want to make it clear that the Equality and Human Rights Commission have said that they will update the Code of Practice, which is different, and that's going to be updated in due course. But as I've said, the Code of Practice they're looking at now isn't directly relevant to employers, but will give employers an idea of how they are interpreting the judgment.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's true to say I've not had a chance to look at the this new revised code in any detail, but there's a lot of stuff in there about toilets from what I could see. It obviously covers other areas at all as well, but there is a lot of stuff in there about that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And as we're on the subject of toilets, let me ask you about that then in the context of employers and employees. So this judgment just talks about the relationship between the Gender Recognition Act and the Equality Act. So agreed, yeah?
Yeah.
And the legal rules about workplace toilets and changing rooms aren't contained in the Equality Act unless they're shared with other service users. So the argument is that this decision doesn't impact employers' policies for their staff and can be ignored. Do you think that's correct?
Again, in one word, no. But this one does require a more detailed explanation.
Yeah.
Because the decision doesn't directly affect other legislation.
Yeah, and to be clear, when you talk about other legislation, what we're talking about here is the Workplace Health, Safety and Welfare Regulations of 1992, which stipulate that separate toilet facilities are available to men and women unless each toilet is in a separate room with a lockable door, with its own wash basin, and in relation to changing rooms, provided to enable employees to change into and out of their work clothes, they should also be segregated by sex. So that's the legislation that we're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so do you think that when the 1992 legislation talks about men and women, it refers to biological sex?
It's not a definitive, but as a result of the Supreme Court judgment, I'd say there are really good odds that if asked the question, the Supreme Court would say that the words man and woman in the 1992 legislation relate to biological sex because of the way it reached the decision in the Four Women Scotland case.
Yeah.
And you've already outlined these, but in this context, I'd also add that the regulations were introduced in 1992, so 12 years before the Gender Recognition Act came into force. The court said there was no doubt that the Sex Discrimination Act 1975 meant biological sex, so it's difficult to see why it would reach a different conclusion here. The legislation is intended for health and safety reasons, and the Supreme Court recognised that females as a biological sex class have a health and safety interest in being separated from biological males in some circumstances.
Yeah, I think that the expression in the 1992 regs relates to propriety. So yeah, I'd agree with that. So do you think we're likely to see cases challenging this then?
Probably. And I do think it will be interesting to see what the outcome might be.
Yeah. Okay. So we're getting to the end of our sort of time now. So I'd just ask you one more. Some commentators are saying that excluding trans people from sex-based areas and services that don't align with their gender identity can't be done via blanket policies. And they say that you have to undertake a case-by-case analysis. I'm interested in your view on that, Elaine.
Yeah, I don't think that's right. If sex means biological sex and you've decided to have, for example, separate toilet or changing facilities, if you allow some biological men, no matter how they identify, then that facility becomes mixed sex.
Yeah.
If your legitimate aim is to protect the dignity and privacy of women and separately of men, the only proportionate way to achieve this is by excluding people of the opposite sex, not some of them, but all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it now is probably a good opportunity to say that we've written about this and have detailed guidance note on it. It was written predominantly for retailers because this is the forefront of their minds, but the principles will apply to all sectors. So if anybody would like us to share that, please do get in touch with Joe or I and we can send you the link.
Thank you, Elaine. I think it's true to say we've only really had time to scratch the surface today. There's a lot more that we could talk about on this.
That's true. And I think the key message we want to give you, whatever your sector, is to make sure that you get some good advice. If you're instructing lawyers, make sure they understand what this means and have experience about correctly advising on it. And of course, we're happy to help. But also be very wary about taking your lead from organisations that have a particular axe to grind. Mm-hmm. I've seen some really bad takes on what this judgment means. And if you follow what they say, you will get into difficulties.
Yeah. Yeah. The only other point I want to make is that it's probably more true than ever to keep your messaging neutral. So whatever you think about the judgment, you know, your personal views about it, it is the law. And I would really recommend that you try and avoid aligning yourself with one group, as this could come across as being partisan and to suggest that you've picked a side. And, you know, ultimately, these sorts of communications will be disclosable in any legal proceedings and will be used by your opponents to undermine your credibility, you know, particularly if we do see cases, you know, about, you know, your policy on toilets or changing rooms or indeed any other aspect of this decision.
Although you and I could continue to discuss this topic for hours, Jo, I think we've reached the end of our allocated time today. We completely appreciate this is a really topical issue, which lots of organisations and employers are grappling with in terms of the practical implications. And so if we can help in any way, please do reach out. More generally, if you've not signed up to receive our invitations and newsletters, please do get in touch. And the same goes for anyone who'd like to suggest topics for Jo and I to discuss in the future. You can reach us via LinkedIn or the IM website.
Brilliant. Thank you. And that's it for today then. Please tune in next month if you want to hear more about the latest employment law updates alongside expert commentary. Thank you so much for listening. Bye-bye.
Thanks all. Bye-bye.